Welcome to the Day One Podcast Extra. Peter Wallace here with the Reverend Dr. Scott Black Johnston, Senior Pastor of Trinity Presbyterian Church in Atlanta, Georgia. Scott, welcome.
Hey, Peter.
You are only the third senior pastor at Trinity Presbyterian Church, and yet it's a major church in the Presbyterian Church USA. Would you give us a little bit of the history of the church?
Trinity Presbyterian Church was planted by First Presbyterian Church of Atlanta, as I guess you would probably at the time call it a suburban church, although we're well within the Atlanta city limits, in the late 1950s. And a son of First Presbyterian Church Atlanta actually became the first pastor there, the Reverend Allison Williams, who was the pastor of the church for 40 years.
Wow.
And saw an amazing amount of change on the Atlanta landscape. One of the pieces of our history that we're very proud of is that Trinity Church, under Allison's leadership, was very active during the civil rights movement. And in fact, the church was approached by leaders in the civil rights movement to set up the first integrated school in the state of Georgia, which became Trinity School. Because of that move toward school integration, the congregation split and at the time lost about a third of its members. But this is the kind of prophetic witness that the church has tried to maintain over the years. Allison stuck by his decision, and the church thrived once again.
Mm-hmm. You moved from the seminary classroom where you taught for 10 years to this major pulpit, senior pastor of this large and thriving church. How difficult was that transition for you?
It was a challenge, Peter. I was very active in preaching out in churches as a seminary professor, but the week in and week out demands of the parish are substantial. I was not used to being, as a seminary professor, the kind of public figure that I am as the pastor of a large church. In other words, it's difficult for me to go out in public anywhere, to the grocery store or to a restaurant in Atlanta, and not to run into some of my parishioners. And there's a wonderful piece about that. And there's also a, wow, I'm always on display kind of piece. I can't be anonymous
right.
anymore. And so and then in a large parish, I think or in any parish really, pastors are aware of the fact that their work is never ending. There's never this – you know, you may finish that sermon on Sunday, but that doesn't mean that there aren't six voicemails waiting for you about people that want to see you for counseling or concerns about the property or people that are frustrated with the denomination of which you're a part. It's a never-ending job. It really is – and learning to boundary myself, learning to have a healthy I'm going to work now. And now I'm going to go spend time with my family. Learning to be able to do that has been one of the most difficult pieces of it all.
Mm. Well, what drew you to make that change in your ministry career?
Peter, I went directly from divinity school to doing PhD work in homiletics to teaching homiletics at Austin Seminary in Austin, Texas. And I was thankful for that progression of my own vocation. And I loved teaching preaching. I had great colleagues at Austin Seminary, and I enjoyed the students that I was working with there. But one thing was missing for me, and it was the reason that I went to divinity school in the first place, and that was the desire, the pull, the call to be preaching to one group of people week in and week out and to be in the midst of their lives and then trying to articulate the gospel there. That was something that I was looking for. I describe it. I mean, this is boiling it down a lot, but I describe it as really a creative impulse. I wanted to be writing and preaching and producing sermons in the midst of the world, I guess.
Mm. We hear reports that mainline denominations are losing members, yet many churches like yours are thriving. Do you have some suggestions about what the mainline churches could be doing differently, better, more of, less of?
The first thing that I usually counsel is do not be anxious. Do not try to be something that you're not. Mm-hmm. Try to do what you do as best you can. You know, there are small towns. I come from a small town in central Minnesota where the number of Christians in that town simply is not changing. And to the extent that the churches are chasing after other people in town, they're just asking them to shift from one church to another. And in those settings, you know, it can seem almost like, you know, what can we do to increase our market share? And I think rather than approaching the problem that way, the better thing is just try to be a faithful Christian community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't think about market share. Just think about being faithful. But for larger urban churches that are looking at the so-called mega churches, the independent churches, bless them. Bless your neighbors. Say, I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing, but we're not you.
Mm-hmm.
We're different. We have a different take on the Christian message. Go with that. Do what you're doing well. I actually think sociologically, we are experiencing in this culture, in American culture right now, a return to tradition.
Mm.
I see that in terms of people that want to sing the old hymns again. We were told for a while there, you might as well put the hymnal in a shredder because it's all going to be, you know, music shown up on a screen with a rock band singing as accompaniment. And all of a sudden, more and more people are saying, you know, there's some good stuff in these old hymns. I mean, the lyrics of these the text of these hymns is theologically rich, and it talks about real stuff, life and death stuff. That kind of return is something that ought to be a very favorable one for the mainline churches.
A number of very hot issues are affecting our churches: sexuality, war, immigration, other justice issues. What is a helpful process for congregations to handle these issues? In other words, how can churches help equip their members to impact their communities more fully regarding some of these issues?
Right. I think, first of all, that clergy have to be willing to preach about and pray about in worship these issues. That doesn't mean necessarily they're supposed to take a stance that's kind of a I'm going to cross my arms and unless you're with me, you're against me stance. Sometimes that is appropriate. Most of the time it probably isn't on controversial issues. But because they're controversial is no reason not to bring them up and to talk about them and to show people that you can talk about them without tearing each other apart.
Mm.
The church, I think, is equipped to do that better than any other place in our society right now. And it really is incumbent upon the church to kind of cultivate these kind of discussions in Sunday school classes, in after worship settings. We need to be talking about immigration, about war, about human sexuality in a way that's not defensive, but is open to hearing each other and to thinking boldly, creatively, prophetically about what God is calling us to do then. And in terms of that, I recommend to those churches that have committees that look at hot button issues, I recommend that they sit down before they look at any one issue and craft a statement that says, here's why we think it's important for the church to speak out on hot button issues. What are the kind of issues that ought to get us talking? And that way, when an issue comes along, you can say, look, here in this statement, it says we speak out on this kind of thing. And if you do that, then you've got a guideline there, that'll assist you at least in getting started.
Right. Well, great food for thought, Scott Black Johnston. Thank you very much.
Peter, it's great to be with you as always.